You're listening to 66.6 FM. Radio TOVH. The Flush.
You're listening to the Toilet of Hell radio show. I'm Joe Thrashenkill. With me today, I've got 365 Days of Horror, and back by popular demand, Brennicide. How's it going, fellas?
It is going.
It's going quite swell.
We've got a whale of a show for you today, fellas. Chris Barnes is joining us later on to talk about conspiracy theories and weed and his new record. For those of you that follow me on Twitter, you'll know that Chris Barnes actually blocked me on Twitter like 6 months ago.
Oh my God, are you serious?
For being an asshole to him, which I totally was.
There was a point when I was trying to kind of revitalize the blog, so I was going to start out by being assholes to like artists on Twitter. And I was like, Chris Barnes is an easy target. I'm going to go for him first. So what I did was he had this kind of dead skin mask avatar. I don't know if he still does, where he wears like a rubber. It was supposed to look like a Leatherface kind of mask over his face for his main profile picture.
When he banned me, he still did, yes.
Yeah, I think he still has it. But I sent him a picture of this guy that like cut out some holes and a smiley face in like a pancake and held it up to his face because it looks just like him. And I sent it right to him and side by side with his picture. And I was just like, this is it. He's going to get so pissed. And all he did was like retweet it and laugh and had a grand old time with it. I just, when I try to make friends with people, I make horrible impressions and they hate me and block me. And when I try to like get on people's skin, they just think I'm the best.
That's funny. Like, number one, I can't believe that Chris agreed to do this with us. And number two, I can't believe how nice he was. Like, I actually feel like a piece of shit for like trying to rile him up on Twitter. So I don't know. I think I learned something from this. We got to get Phil Labonte on the show and, you know, see if he can make amends with us.
I might be able to set that up. I actually practice in the same jam spot that he does. ATR.
He slid into my DMs the other day on Twitter and asked for my address.
Start at the beginning. You have to start at the beginning for some of the people who don't know.
Christ. Again, like, if you just want to like waste all of your time and get really irrationally angry at complete strangers on the internet, nothing is better than Twitter, like hands down. So follow me at Joe Thrashenkill. Like I guess a week ago, I logged in. I was drinking my coffee first thing in the morning, just seeing what was up in the world, seeing what war crimes Donald Trump was committing, and I see that Phil Labonte had retweeted some Molenlabe patriot dipshit, and then commented like, "I don't know why the left wants violence. If you know there something were to come to a head, we've got all the guns and we'll slaughter them all." I thought that was kind of funny in a way. I know that these Oath Keeper types like honestly believe that they're the true defenders of the Constitution and they have all the training under their belts to, you know, slaughter anyone that is not white. But it was dumb. So I just retweeted it with "love to play pretend Rambo on twitter.com and just set off his ire in a way that I don't know, he probably doesn't get to, but 3 or 4 times a week.
The 3 or 4 times.
I mean, he seems like a person that is angry about a lot of things. Like the fact that he can't grow a mustache, number one. And the fact
that
he
hates feminism, too, if you go on his Twitter. He hates feminism. That's like half of what he talks about, and the other half is about freedom and constitution and guns.
Freedom, constitution. Anyway, he replied back to me. He was like, "What did I say that wasn't true?" And I replied with, "Oh, you're just a cute little one-man killing machine. Yes, you are." And from there, what he immediately did was screenshotted that tweet, posted it in Instagram, where he apparently has more followers than on Twitter, and commented, this is what I put up with. This guy just shits on me every chance he gets just because he doesn't like the songs I write. Think about that. He goes out of his way to be a cunt because he doesn't like the music. It's not like we make him listen. He chooses to listen. Then he chooses to get on the internet and shit on me. How fucking sad is that? What a fucking faggot. The reason I saw this, I don't follow his Instagram. I don't give that much of a shit, really. The reason I saw this is because he has, like, Hootsuite set up or something, so everything he posts to all of his social media goes through all channels at once. Yeah, I grabbed a screenshot of that and laughed at him for calling me a faggot because he's so mad. So mad. And then he replies, you are a faggot. It's a true statement. And from there, like, he had a full-on, complete pants-shitting meltdown. He started calling Otep Shemaya, like, a faggot over and over again, who, if, you know, y'all don't know, she is a queer artist who has way more fans than he does. After a while, he just started tweeting the word faggot over and over and over again, several times, completely lost it.
Yeah, I was glad to bear witness to that. And it's the thing is, Western Massachusetts guys, they're all a lot like Villabonte. They all lift weights and wear camouflage baseball hats and have chin straps and just casually call each other faggots and punch each other in the arm and go ride dirt bikes. And
I'm from
rural, like every American flag.
Yeah, I'm from rural Texas, have, dude. Like, it's the same shit.
Yeah. They like. I don't know if you've heard that Country Boy song from Aaron Lewis of Stained.
No, of course not.
But have you heard it? He's like, he's singing as if he's from rural Texas, but really he's from like yuppie ass East Longmeadow, Massachusetts, where all the houses and yards are big. And he's just like, I'm a real country boy. I drink beer and ride my quad. And it's just, I don't know. It's a bunch of bow hunting retards out here. And I don't know if Villabonte is the same sort of way, but he definitely talks and acts like it.
Well, Aaron Lewis has a Don't Tread on Me tattooed across his stupid fat neck. So
he also has a solo song called Granddaddy's Gun.
Nothing I love more than jerking off with Granddaddy's Gun.
Watch him shoot.
Granddaddy's gun is hanging on my shelf, and it's loaded with bullets for every black person I know.
So here's the kicker of this is that someone like handed in a tip to Metal Sucks that like me and Labonte were beefing on Twitter. And it got written up by, like, every major metal site. Metal Sucks, Metal Injection, Metal Insider, PRP, etc. Bob's Discount Metal News. And it sucks, man. Like, I've got 250 followers on Twitter. Like, I'm a nobody. It doesn't matter. And all the work that I put into Toilet of Hell, the show, everything, nothing I've ever done has achieved that level of prominence as getting called a faggot by some dipshit on Twitter.
you take it where you can get it, man. You know, I've had this opinion for a long time, but I think Twitter has pretty much ruined America in terms of politics because political discourse should not be like 140 characters at a time. It's pretty much just lends itself to bumper sticker politics and dumb uncle politics. Everybody's opinion on Twitter is just like the most chopped down, bite-sized, stupid thing to say, where it's really not well-rounded and anybody ever could argue with what you say because you really don't have a complete thought on Twitter with anything you tweet. So everything comes off stupid no matter what side of the fence you're on. And it's just I think Donald Trump is like the first Twitter account to actually become president, because all he really is at the end of the day is a Twitter account. And all of his executive orders, if you actually read them, they're like two sentences long. It's just like, stop all the Muslims from coming in, signed Donald Trump. And then all this shit hits the fan because these things aren't well thought out and there's really no instructions to them. And I don't know. Long story short, I blame Twitter.
Everybody should probably log off. Retire, bitch.
Yeah, right now. Especially Mr. Labonte. Please.
So we got... I brought you on the show today. Number one was, you know, because I was too lazy to do a complete show by myself with just 365. Number two, because one of our readers, listeners rather, demanded that you come on and talk about a topic with us. And I would love to say this guy's name, but I'm a shitty American and I can't pronounce foreign names. So I apologize. Thank you for listening. Your request has been answered. With Brenneside here, because there is news to talk about with Winter Sun, and I want you to bring up some history that you have with this band.
Well, I've been a huge fan of Winter Sun since their debut album. Years and years ago, before we kind of hit the 2010s mark, if somebody asked me like what my favorite band was, it was nowadays it's like, oh, well, you know, it's about my mood and the genre and all this other stuff. But back in the day, it was like, oh, it's Winter Sun. Because you know, they just, for some reason, that first album, it just hit all the marks. Like, it was epic. It was shreddy. It was, like, really great death metal, really great power metal. Had really great melodies and just everything you could look for in an album. It was beautiful. Now, Yadi Mayempa, the kind of the band leader... he did this with like a 16 track recorder, and it was one of the best albums ever. Now, this whole thing started happening with Time, and mind you, Time, the whole Time thing was announced in like, I think it was 2006, a very long time ago at this point. We've been kind of on this roller coaster with the whole Time fiasco.
So the first record was self-titled, right?
Yeah. It's just, well, I think so. It might have been like Battle Against Time or something. I can't recall. You're putting me on the spot here.
Sorry.
Oh, it's my favorite album of all time. I love it so much. So what's it called? I don't know.
You love Winter Sun, huh? Name three albums.
Time One. I don't know any other one.
Vulgar Display of Winter Sun.
Sorry. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Winter Sun O. but yeah, it's just it's been one of those things where I think back in like 2007 they recorded all the guitars, all the drums, everything they needed recorded. The metal stuff that people actually care about was all set in Sonic Pump Studios in like 2007. This was done, and there was a long, long time when he did not do anything on social media. It's all he does now. But back then, he didn't say anything. He would just say like, oh, guys, next year it's coming. And this was like in, Jesus Christ, 2008 or so. And it was a lot like necrophagist or whatever. It was like, oh, it's coming. It's almost done. And then a whole lot of nothing for a long time. And then the rest is history. I mean, you guys are aware of how he would just come up with excuse after excuse after excuse, totally different things that really had no relation to each other. And he would just kind of lazily point to these things and whine and say, well, I can't finish the album. Guys, they're jackhammering outside my apartment and it's ruining my music.
So I'm not totally, you know, I've never really given this band a chance, but if I recall correctly, he said that he needed to build a recording studio. Like, build an entire recording studio to make this record, right?
Well, this was something he decided so freaking late in the game. This was something he's been on about for, like, only a couple, like, I shouldn't say only a couple years, but this thing has gone on so long that this is something he's been on about for only, like, the last 2 years or so. Before, his very first excuse, from what I recall, is that he didn't have a good enough computer to mix this big, epic layer of sound album that he was planning on doing. He wanted to do something that was a lot more Devin Townsend inspired with Gross. The Time records. He wanted to do, yeah, this really big symphonic epic album. His excuse was, I don't have a 64-bit system that can handle all the plugins I'm using. Either that or his plugins were only 32-bit and he had a 64-bit system and they couldn't work. So he's waiting for drivers or something. He wanted to handle everything in-house, right in his apartment, right at his fingertips. He just wanted to sit on his MacBook and noodle for years and years and years doing this all himself. And not ever at any point did he reach out for help, reach out to Nuclear Blast to have him set up with a professional to do this or anything. He wanted to do it all himself. And he basically self-taught himself Pro Tools. And so what I pretty much point out in this article I wrote is that 2007, we had everything we wanted as metal fans. All the drums, guitars, all the great stuff we wanted was set to go, but he spent like 9.5 years working on his twinkly bullshit that nobody really wanted, and like overlayered all the albums and kind of ruined everything. Because if you guys have actually heard Time One, either of you, you would know it was way overproduced and way overlayered and too much reverb and too much shit on top of shit, and you can barely hear the stuff that actually matters.
So, where does that leave us now?
Well, what that brings us to now is his next excuse is that, well, I only have his apartment, I have limited resources, and he is now looking to get a studio built on crowdfunding, or through crowdfunding. And Nuclear Blast said, you know, look, man, we've given you more than enough money, you've taken way too much time to do this, and we're not, you know, you can't, part of your contract is you can't go crowdfunding. So he goes online and he puts Nuclear Blast, on blast.
No, I was hoping you would do that.
He whined about the fact that he's like, I've signed a deal with the devil. They won't let me do what I want. They won't, you know, let me do this crowdfunding campaign. I need more money. I need more resources. You know, he just whines and whines and whines. And as far as I know, he's like been finished with Time 2 for a while, but it's just not up to his standard. It's just up to the Time One standard, and he wasn't really happy with that. That was like him backed into a corner. He had to release something at that point, or they were gonna do something drastic. So that's why we got Time One. That little, it's just about an EP, and it's so awkward now because we have Time One, then we have a whole lot of nothing and a whole lot of excuses and a whole lot of more waiting, and now finally we have this Four Seasons album he just announced, which is just this completely random different album with that I think he just wanted to make like a thrashy kind of more in the style of the first album with the limited resources, and he doesn't want to do the big symphonic stuff, which I'm actually excited for. But he's finally gotten it through to Nuclear Blast, and he's doing a crowdfunding campaign to make this fucking studio built for him for hundreds of thousands of dollars. And everybody's mad at him because he wants to put a sauna in it. Have you guys seen this?
He's a Finn dude, Finnish dude, right?
Yeah, so he's trying to explain to people, no, you guys don't understand. Everything has a sauna in Finland. There has to be one, you know. Everybody's just like, you know, I'm not paying to build you a fucking sauna, man.
I don't know a whole lot about Finland other than it's cold, and from the commenters that we have on Toilet of Hell from Finland, they're weird. They're very weird people.
Strange, yeah. And I'm rambling because there's just so much information to cover about this in one breath. It started out with my computer's not good enough. Then it's like, oh, they're jackhammering outside, you know. Oh, I have limited resources, I need to have a whole studio. And basically, at the end of the day, Yachty is just like this insane, awkward control freak, and he's just obsessed with the perfection and the vision he has for this album. And I think it ignores a very important mantra in creative output in general, which is done is better than perfect. I think we would have, as listeners, been very happy with Time 2 the way that it was, with the compromises he should have made. And instead, we're just left here simmering, pissed off. I really haven't been a Winter Sun fan for years, specifically because of this whole fiasco, which many people will tell him on Facebook all the time. But I don't see the point in really making it clear to him that he's, you know, pissed off me, because for every person that tells him, look, man, enough's enough, I'm done waiting, he's got 20 other people who say, you know, you want quality, then you gotta wait. I am perfectly happy waiting for what you have, Yachty. I love you. And I'm more than done. I'm not going to contribute to the crowdfunding campaign. If Four Seasons ends up on Spotify or something, I'm sure I'll give it a spin, but I'm definitely not going to help this guy build his fucking studio when he's perfectly capable of going to somebody else's studio, for Christ's sake. I'm sure they have those in Finland.
I hope one of the, like, crowdfunding perks is, like, get to hang out in the sauna with him.
Yeah, right?
So this is, like, the Finnish version of Chinese democracy.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well,
I gotta wonder, like, how much of this is, like, him not wanting to deal with imperfection, and how much of this is, like, him getting the yips and realizing, like, these songs kind of suck.
Well, I liked the album Time One. I liked it okay. I thought it was a good album, but really great albums are released by major label bands like these guys. Every 2 to 3 years, you'll get, you know, pretty constant output from really great bands who just do things by the book. And I think Yachty got in way over his head. He wanted to just kind of handle this himself, mix the whole thing himself. And it really just didn't come out right. And it's just not working for him. And rather than admitting his failures and saying, you know, I think I'm not able to do this, I should have somebody else do this, and I should have someone else in a different studio handle this whole thing, he's just a little too proud, and he's a little too awkward, and he's just kind of, and if you've ever seen the guy, he's very awkward. Like, he's just, I think he's on the spectrum or something, not to be a shitlord about it, but if you've seen him, he's like,
I think that's
really,
just
like,
I think that's just a Finland thing, dude.
No. I'm serious. This guy, he like avoids eye contact and is just like, he's like seizes up when people talk to him. And
same.
I don't think it's just same. Yeah, it's really been something, man. You got lots of people who've been waiting for a very long time, and he keeps updating, and he keeps making promises, and he keeps making excuses. And I think there's some obvious things he could have done along the way a long time ago. And I think that if people aren't frustrated and done with him at this point, they very well should be. You just, when you're an artist, man, and you make money and you do this for a living, you got deadlines to meet, you know, you got things you got to do. And how ridiculous is it now that after all these years of waiting, he's finally decided, okay, well, I'll just throw together some other record that's not as good for you guys because you won't shut the fuck up. You know, he could have done this 8 years ago.
It kind of makes me think about George R.R. Martin, the Game of Thrones writer dude,
right,
who has just like not turned in any pages related to his main story in like a decade now, and just keeps writing like fucking blog posts about the NFL and like little short stories from other shitty sci-fi things that like nobody else cares about, just because like, I think he's lost the drive, man. Like he's
I
got,
think so too.
Yeah, he's got HBO, like, you know, carrying his nuts for him. Like, they're writing the story. Or, like, why should he?
Or a minute after Carrie Fisher dies, he'll write a tweet saying, "I wrote 2016," and then a minute after that, say, "I'm sorry for what I said." That's how he spends his time. But every time I'm on, every week I'm on, 365 sits in silence while I ramble. 365, what the hell do you think about this whole Winter Sun fiasco? What's your take? What's your hot take? Your hottest take on this?
My hottest take. Well, let's see. Finnish people have high cheekbones compared to Americans. So that is what is preventing him from being capable of creating this new album.
Oh my
and
God.
And really we... needs them.
This is toilet of phrenology.
I was going to say he needed to get surgery to get them filed down so he's able to complete the next album.
It's all in his brow. It's indicative of criminal character.
Like Brock Lesnar.
So what you're saying is Joe messaged you and said, "Hey, we're going to talk about Winter Sun this week." And you went on Google and went, "Winter Sun. They're from Finland."
I didn't even bother Googling Winter Sun.
You were just like, they're from Finland. I can do this. I can work with this.
Come on.
I went, Renaissance is going to be on the show. I don't have to say anything.
Yeah, yeah. We brought an expert in. Like, you know what you're talking about here, so we don't have to. I don't know about you fellas, but I am ready for some football.
I'm ready for bad things to happen to Tom Brady.
Yeah, let's get into this. We're recording this afternoon is going to be the Super Bowl, which, you know, it's a thing, you know? I can't remember a Super Bowl that I've been less excited about than this one. I don't know. Maybe I'm alone in that. How do you guys feel about this?
I think a few years ago, there was like the Bears played the Steelers or something like that. There's or maybe it was like the Colts played the Bears. It was a really boring Super Bowl where it like rained in Florida maybe about 10 years ago. But this one's only exciting because, you know, I'm in New England, so is Brenneside, and if the Patriots lose, we get to be surrounded by pissy massholes for the next 5 or 6 months.
Well, that's my life anyway, so I'm not really.
Brenneside, are you a Pats fan? Fucking no. Pats?
I'm not a fucking Pats. Every idiot I know around here totally is just undying affection for Tom Brady and that fucking pile of shit, Belichick, and I could not give less of a shit anymore. I used to, way back in the day, I used to feign interest about, you know, football and local teams and baseball and stuff, but I don't know what it is, man. I've just built so much cynicism over the years, and I was sitting there, like, eating some chips, enjoying a football game, and then all of a sudden, it just struck me like a lightning bolt. These are a bunch of millionaires playing catch, and after that, I just bailed, and I've never looked back.
I grew up a Cowboys fan, and, you know, I still watch the Cowboys pretty much every Sunday that they play, even though, that, you know, this season was great. They've been dog shit for, you know, as long as I've been alive. But I think about it every week. Like, Jerry Jones is a contemptible piece of shit. He is a net negative life force on this universe, and giving him a dollar is basically the worst idea you can have. I feel the same way about Kraft and Belichick and Tom fucking Brady. Tom fucking Brady. And we don't talk about this enough. The moral character of the New England Patriots. They had a murderer on their staff right up until he got arrested for serial killing. You know, people are like, the Patriots way. But no, like, y'all got some fucking trash. Just
Gronkowski never did anything wrong.
Gronkowski is like almost surely like a serial date rapist. Look at his face.
No, he's not. He's a tall, awkward guy that probably doesn't talk to girls that well. I mean, now he's in the Patriots, maybe, but
he's a Bud Light lime bottle with muscles.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
Have you seen his cereal Gronk flakes? He doesn't look very confident on there. He's just like, they're like, oh, mega goofy face Gronk. He's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, Gronk flakes. Is that what we're calling roofies now?
Roofies.
Whenever I go to like Stop and Shop and I see those, my girlfriend likes to point out and says he has a cum shot face on.
At the beginning of the NFL season, my boss gave me a $50 Visa gift card for doing something good, or I forget exactly. He gave it to me for some reason. What I did was what any smart young capitalist in America would do, in that I took it and I deposited it into Bovada.lv, which is a Latvian online gambling site. In the time since, I've stretched that $50 to, I think my top point was 1,100, but the AFC Championship game killed me, so I'm down to 768. I've stretched the 50 to 768 for the Super Bowl. I'm looking at the prop bets on the site right now and just, you know, thinking, where can I make the most money? Where can I be the smartest with this? I have no real rooting strength, like, in the Falcons, aside from I don't know of any Falcons players or, you know, ownership or coaches that are BFFs with Donald Trump, whereas the Patriots do. Tom Brady said he's friends with Donald Trump, held a MAGA hat in his locker for a long time. Belichick says that he's actually kissed Donald Trump in the past. So if
did
those
he do
guys,
it with that face?
Yeah, the stink face.
That, like, stern has. Stink face. Did they just stink face each other and then they just fell in love?
Just permanent lemon sucking faces on both of them.
Mm. Now they're just
a lemon party
sucking each other's
Belichick
faces.
And Donald Trump playing. If you guys don't know how odds work, the spread on this game is the New England Patriots at -3, which means you could pick the Patriots to win by 3 points or more, and that will pay out. That pays off -120, which means that a lot of people are betting on the Pats to win by that amount. Or you could bet on Atlanta +3, which means that they could still lose by up to 3 points, and you'd win. If they win, you, of course, get it as well. That's even money. So betting $500 on Atlanta to cover that, we'll pay off $500. Betting $500 on New England to hit it at -3 will only pay off $416. So, I mean, the gambling gods here, they're telling me what to do. I think I've got an answer.
Do you place bets on like some of the weird things that can happen in the game? Like, I know people bet on the coin toss or if the first score is going to be a safety. Do you do any of that?
Yeah, I mean, like, some of these, it's so unlikely. Like, the first touchdown scorer, you can bet on who is the most likely to do it. Like, Julio Jones and Devonta Freeman, those are both plus 700, plus 800. So that means if you put, like, $100 down on it, you get, three. Yeah. But if you put Eric Weems down, I don't know who Eric Weems is. As far as I know, he's, like, a backup quarterback. If you put down $100 for him to be the first touchdown scorer, you get $10,000. So some of these things, it's just like, well, this is so unlikely, but if it pays off, I really want to be there, so I'll put down $5 or $10 on that kind of thing.
Yeah, when the Giants last played the Patriots, the first score was a safety, so it's not out of the realm of possibility.
That paid off like huge for like whatever drunk shithead in Caesar's Palace is like, yeah, sure, why not?
Why not? I got nothing to lose. I'm in Caesar's Palace.
Yeah, and you can bet on like the over-under of the national anthem. We're going the over today, fellas. But yeah, you guys, what do you think? Who will have more passing yards in this game, Matt Ryan or Tom Brady?
Matt Ryan.
Yeah. Yeah. Vegas agrees with you. He's a heavy, heavy favorite for this. So,
he's a deep passer. Tom Brady is like the quick, like 5-yard little pass that Julian Edelman manages to run for 25 yards or Gronk manages to run for 15 yards here or there. He can throw it deep, but he doesn't do it all that often.
My prediction for this game is that it's going to, let's see, I think it's set at 58.5 points total scored for the game is what Vegas thinks, the over-under on that. I predict 190 points scored between the two teams, and I'm going to say Atlanta takes it by 6.
Well, I'm pulling for the Falcons. I think it's going to be a stupid score, like 39-37 or something like that. I'm also predicting that during one of the plays, Tom Brady is going to trip over his UGG boots, and a guy on the Falcons is going to jam a Make America Great hat down his throat.
he's gonna hurt his bitch ass ankle again or some stupid shit.
And then people will remember that Tom Terrific left his pregnant girlfriend to marry a supermodel.
Oh yeah, Bridget Moynihan. Yeah. After Atlanta embarrasses the Patriots, I hope that Bill Belichick takes the 50-yard line and self-eviscerates himself with seppuku.
Oh, I want him to light his stupid hoodie on fire for self-immolation.
Yeah, there's your prediction for the game, fellas. You know, you'll be listening tomorrow morning, so You'll see how accurate we were, but I think our guess is total points scored something around 70, Atlanta just pulling it out, and Bill Belichick killing himself on the field.
Yeah, right.
Whatever makes Donald Trump sad should make all of us happy. So go Falcons.
Yeah, go Falcons. I'm glad I have like a moral reason to be against the Pats this. This year, instead of just being like a petty goth kid shut in like I always am, just being like football is gay or whatever. Now I can actually have like a higher moral ground to stand on and be like, Tom Brady supports a candidate that I do not agree with, and I think he has a moral obligation to be apolitical in his stance as a blah 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 blah.
Let's go ahead and wrap this turkey up then. Joined today by one of the fathers of death metal, that is of course the one and only Chris Barnes. Chris, how's it going today?
Oh, not too bad. Thanks a lot. How are you guys doing?
Doing great. So glad for you, that you could join us today. So on February 24th, Metal Blade is going to drop 6 Feet Under's 12th studio album. That would be Torment. After recording as many records as you've done, how do you stay motivated to keep doing it?
Just a lot of fun for me, man. I've always had a good time being a band and writing music. It's just something I love to do. So, I'll keep doing it until it doesn't become fun. I love creating new music.
What would have to happen for that to be unfun?
Well, that's a good question, man. I guess it'll always be fun for me. It'll just be at a different level, you know. Maybe I won't put out music, but I'll always write and perform, even if it's in front of no one.
Right on. You know, I watched a playthrough video of your guitarist Jeff Hewell doing exploratory homicide, and He and Marco, they play in your band. They used to be in one of my favorite bands, Brain Drill. How did you get hooked up with those guys?
Well, Jeff came into the band before Marco did. But yeah, I just needed a bass player, and Jeff, I knew of Brain Drill as well, and someone at the label mentioned that they weren't available, they weren't doing anything as far as Jeff wasn't, at that point. And it just kind of came together, you know, just with a phone call. And after we got rid of Tally, Jeff and I were talking, and Marco was the first name that came into the conversation, and it seemed like the logical drummer to have, because those guys are such good friends and such a great rhythm section. With their talents.
That's awesome.
What's the writing process like for a 6 Feet Under song? Does it start with you and the lyrics, or do you have a certain riff in your head that you'd like other people to fill out?
Yeah, no, neither way. I don't know anyone that writes lyrics first and then writes music to it. I mean, I don't know, unless you write the music, if you play an instrument maybe and also write lyrics and sing. Maybe it's easier that way, but I've never done that. It's just very foreign to me. It seems kind of backwards. But no, I have written music myself. I can play the guitar a little bit, and I've written a couple 6 Feet Under songs, and also just, you know, worked some stuff out with the other members at certain times through the career of the band. But on this album, and on a lot of the albums throughout the past, 20 years. I mean, it's always, I guess, throughout my career, man, even when I was in Cannibal, not even 6 Feet Under stuff, but I just always get the music first, and then I write the lyrics by listening to the music. And that way I interpret my vocal presentation as well as let myself be taken away by the music and let it speak to me in order to come up with a storyline and lyrics.
You know, if you were to ask anybody what they think about Chris Barnes' lyrics, I think the most common reply would be that you're a lyricist that focuses on creating horror stories and, you know, using a lot of gore and shock. But you've also explored political territory as well with tracks like America the Brutal, in which you made a clear statement against the Iraqi war during the Bush administration.
Yeah, for sure. I've even going back to the first Cannibal Corpse album, you know, I wrote a song called Put Them to Death, and that was a song speaking out for the death penalty. So, I always kind of explore my own imagination and my own questions that I have in my own mind about things having to do with life. And people can take it, my lyrics is just horror at a surface value, but there's a little bit something more to it. Even with the stories are about horror, it's about slapping you in the face and making you understand that life is precious and that you only live once. And the idea of the duality of all of our existence and where we all come from, why we're here, and the exploration of that within our own energy, I guess. And that's kind of what I've always tried to interpret with horror, is be able to make people question certain things in life and about certain things in life, whether it be too difficult or you know, to really do that on your own, or just to be like, you know, just in sheer wonder, and that makes you kind of forced into thinking about something.
I read an interview with you. You put out, a couple album cycles ago, in which you said that you stopped riding ATVs and motorcycles because you had a couple of close calls. Did that?
Oh, right on. Yeah, I did. I'd like to ride off road more than on road. I'd just probably try to be a little bit less aggressive. I'm not as young as I used to be, but yeah, man, I love all sorts of motorsports, and I've raced cars and all sorts of stuff. Riding on the street, I still have this urge to want a motorcycle, but it's just too many people don't pay attention, and I think I've worn out my 9 lives as far as that goes over my life, you know, is riding motorcycles.
Understandable. So with the current administration and the current political climate in the world, do you think 6 Feet Under would ever delve back into maybe more overtly political things? I don't know. What's your opinion on what's going on?
It's pretty horrible. I mean, everyone can see that. I mean, if you can't, you're just a delusional kind of a team follower type of person. Yeah. And I don't like sports really, so
so no, know, Super Bowl pick.
I don't like, yeah, those are just games, man. They're, I think someone said there are only two real actual sports, and that's auto racing and mountain climbing. But the thing about it is, we're in a dangerous situation, and the Constitution is being eroded. And a lot of people are enjoying that, and it's not what America's about. And I think the majority of us know that. And I think it'll be interesting to see what happens next.
Interesting and horrifying, probably.
Yeah, yeah. You know, hopefully it'll be some sort of liberation of some sort from this horror that we're witnessing already.
Well, it's only been 2 weeks. Hopefully it won't be much longer, but we'll see.
Yeah. Thanks. You know, let's you know, keep our fingers crossed.
I was listening to a Torment earlier today, and, you know, it's very much in the style of Six Feet Under, the brutal and heavy. But there's one song that stood out to me, and the title actually made me laugh out loud. And the song is called Bloody Underwear. And I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, it's not so much exactly a sequel or anything, but it was more like a thought I had, I guess, when I thought of the song title and the storyline was like, what would be a side story or an after story for the song Fucked with a Knife?
Oh.
So it went from that perspective in a way. And the shock value of both of those song titles is kind of is stirring, is psychologically and at face value. So it makes me laugh that when people like don't know what to think of it.
My immediate assumption was just it was a tale about eating Taco Bell.
You can always interpret it any way you want, man. I don't eat at Taco Bell, so it's far from my reality.
That's a good call. You'll probably live longer that way.
Yeah, I'm trying, man. I'm trying.
So one of my favorite lyrics that you've written isn't actually from Cannibal Corpse or from 6 Feet Under. It's for a band you did an album with called Torture Killer. And
okay.
It's the song Cannibal Gluttony, and the line is "Fornicate the dead." I was curious what some of your favorite lyrics that you've written are.
Oh, all right. Yeah. that came out of left field, man. That was a good one.
Yeah, we keep it interesting here.
Yeah, I don't know. I have a hard time with favorites of anything, you know, even with food or something. You know, some days pizza's my favorite and other times, you know, tacos are my favorite. So I can't really pick favorites in life. I always get pissed off at myself that I box myself into some. You know, even with music, man, it's like, boy, I really like that. But why did I say it was my favorite last week or something, you know? So I don't know, everything I write is kind of like so personal to me, and it has such a different meaning. Like I can go back and think about what it was when I wrote that part or something, and it's like, oh yeah, that's where I was in my life or something. So, you know, some of the favorite songs I've written are memorable, as I remember sitting down and writing them, like Stripped, Raped, and Strangled and Feasting on the Blood of the Insane. Those two songs, when I wrote them, my pen didn't leave the paper. I wrote them straight through. It was like a minute, you know, 2-3 minutes it took to write those songs.
Oh, damn. So you, I guess it's been 4 records now that you've done with of Graveyard Classics, and that you played your own version, your interpretation of classic rock and metal songs. Is there anything that you really wanted to do that you never made it onto one of those records? Is there one song that you're just like, damn, I wish I covered that?
No, we picked some real good ones. You know, I particularly love number 2. You know, it's my favorite, I think, because we snuck that one in under the radar, and it was a really great accomplishment because of how it all came together. I mean, a lot of people don't appreciate it, but if you sync that up to the original recording of Black, Back in Black, it syncs up exactly beat for beat, note for note, lyric for lyric. So,
oh wait, it's the same tempo and everything?
100% everything. It'll play right with it in sequence, like on top of it, like dead on.
Damn, I had no idea.
Yeah, that's how we made that album. It's exactly like that. And so that was a lot of fun. And there's just a lot of ins and outs to that people don't get, but it's okay. I think it's one of our greatest accomplishments.
That is
I think AC/DC does too. That's why they blocked the sale of it.
I think those guys are pretty serious about their money.
No, they get paid. They get paid. They blocked the sale, so now they don't get paid. But you know, so I don't know I don't know the thought behind that. I guess it's just ego.
You could feel comfortable in knowing that they know you exist. You know, if the guys from AC/DC are playing in front of 50,000 people and they know who 6 Feet Under is.
Yeah, that's okay. I never was looking for recognition, just trying to do something exciting and fun for myself.
So do you have big plans to tour in support of this record?
Well, yeah, we're trying to. We're trying to put some things together. It looks fairly good so far. We've got some U.S. dates, a couple different legs of touring that we're trying to schedule in, and they're getting started on that now. So it looks pretty good for early summer and then late fall for the States, and some stuff in Europe in the summertime festival-wise, and at the end of the year for our usual German festivals.
Are there any newer bands that you'd be interested in taking out on tour with you?
Yeah, a few, man. I've put in my requests to the booking agent already for this tour coming up, hopefully, for the first leg. And, yeah, just kind of waiting to see if he can put it all together. But, yeah, I pay attention to what's going on out there and some of the more interesting bands that still know what death metal's about and the ones that are not faking it.
So no metalcore bands or new metal bands on this tour.
I didn't say any of that, but yeah, I think you're pretty safe to, you know,
yeah.
you won't be exposed to that.
So you've been touring for many decades now, and you know, people talk about the hardships of the road, but what is something that people don't know that's difficult about touring that you should let them know about?
Oh, it's gotten more difficult over here in the States, for sure. It's barely feasible for a band like us because we're in a different position on the totem pole, as they say. You know, we're in kind of a nomad's land where, you know, we have to tour a certain way. We can't really go back into a van or something like that. It's just dangerous, and I don't like that. I'm not going to do it to myself, or the musicians in the band. It's just stupid. So to be safe and to do our music the way we need to do it and bring it across to the fans, you know, things have to be financially feasible, and they haven't been for us for a while, and there's a number of reasons for that, but everything's connected, so, you know, it's more difficult touring now over here than it was, and I think we all know why, you know, we all know why, because a certain entitled portion of the fan base out there and have taken it upon themselves to not buy music and you know that's been going on for so long that it's had an effect on the industry to the point where magazines are going out of business, record labels are closing shop, merchandise companies are closing up, venues, promoters, bus companies, radio stations. So, you know, it's a consumer-driven industry, and as artists, we're victims of that. So it's become very difficult, and we've had to be more creative in the way we look at things, but still no one's risking safety to do that. No one's going to risk their lives for it, because I want to be around for another 25 years at least doing this. And you know, I think it's important to have a clear mind when it comes to reality, when it comes to touring, and you pick and choose the places that you can bring your music across to the people that enjoy it at the level in which it deserves to be brought across at.
I guess this is a thing that me and 365 Days talk about all the time, but it seems like there just isn't a feasible way for any band that's, you know, smaller than a stadium headliner to make any money in metal. It's just, we have no idea what to do at this point where a band could be financially stable doing it. Do you have any thoughts?
Well, I stop thinking that there's any shortcuts in life, you know. Get yourself into your rehearsal space if you're a new band for, 3 hours a day, 7 days a week, 6 days a week, for 3.5 years, like I did with Cannibal Corpse, and you might get lucky.
I think that's...
But you have to work. You have to work hard at it, and you're talking a lot of hours into something, man. And that's something that bands don't do anymore. You know, I know it's not. I don't see it.
You're very active on Twitter, which is awesome because you reach out to your fans all the time. And I've noticed that sometimes you like talking about, I guess you can call them, conspiracy theories. And I know you haven't, you said you don't have favorites, but is there one or two that really speaks to you that you like to explore further?
You've picked up on me liking conspiracy theories. Okay, yeah. I don't call them conspiracy theories. I call them alternate facts.
You've been watching the news.
Well, no, it's what it is I'd like to kind of just make sure, you know, everything's like what it seems to be, you know. And there are some things that I think we're told that we're corralled in a certain way of thinking, and maybe there's other answers out there, so I choose to explore all possibilities, even the ones I don't like or I don't believe, you know, because there's always something in everything to learn. So yeah, I think it's kind of freaking everybody out is the Mandela effect. So that's something that, if you want to call it conspiracy theory, I call it fact, because I've experienced things that I know are true. You know, I'm not going to go into that, but you know, I know there's something happening.
So the Mandela effect, that's when people have different recollections of the same event, just in small differences. Is that correct?
Yeah. And it could be large differences. There's been occurrences of physical things that have happened to people, as far as, you know, people in their lives that have died that all of a sudden die again, you know. So it's very strange. There's some interesting questions and some ins and outs and some understandings, and it's a rabbit hole like a lot of things are, you know. You don't, it's up to you to how far you want to dive into it, and how much of it you can take. You know, not many people can, and there's reasons for that as well.
Have you heard any alternative facts or theories about yourself that you found funny?
Well, there's all sorts of rumors and kind of things like that people like to talk about. Sure, I mean, I see that stuff, you know. Yeah. Of course, man. You know, but it's people. You see, this is the whole thing, man. Is people believe what they want to believe, what's easy for them to understand, and you could tell people facts about something. I mean, stone cold facts that you yourself know are true because you did them yourself, and you could sit there and tell someone a story about something that actually happened, the way it happened, how it happened, because you know it happened, you were there, first person, and they won't believe you because they are more comforted in their own interpretation of things. And, you know, that's energy that I don't wish to expend, is teaching people certain truths that they choose to ignore anyways in life. And that journey is a journey that we all take on our own, as far as opening ourselves up to understandings about certain things, whether it be about ourselves, how we interpret things and things like that. But yeah, man, I get all that. You know, some people don't like me. Some people, you know, I don't like certain people that I don't know either. And I'm sure if I met them, I might have a different outlook on things, or I might not, you know. But, you know, I don't wish to control what people think. I just choose to be who I am, and people can accept that or not.
You've been an outspoken advocate for weed for a number of years. Do you feel that plays into kind of a sense of inner peace for you, for accepting?
It is. I'm sure it's been a hindrance in my life, but as well, it's been a part of my spiritual journey. And a big part of, like, my philosophy about life and how I do things. I think that it's helped me envision things and meditate on certain daydreams that I've had, and have those daydreams have become reality because of meditation with the use of cannabis. Not one song I've ever written has been without the use of cannabis in a spiritual way. So I believe that it's a way to open your third eye and tap into an energy form that is a etherical plane of existence that holds a hall of records.
That is a really interesting way of putting it. Have you ever tried dabs? I watched my friend do it the other day. It looked horrific.
Yes, I've vaporized oil. Yes, I have.
Is that a better experience?
It depends on how the oil has been concentrated, what process it's gone through. But generally speaking, because it's concentrated, the THC is concentrated. It's vaporizing, so it enters your body in a different way, a more pure way. So some people say there are more benefits to that. I've experimented with that, of course, and I kind of have gone back to just smoking flower, I enjoy that. I like rosin a little bit better than the BHOs or the CO2 stuff or anything like that. It's a little more organic.
But I wanted to thank you so much for coming on the show today and joining us. I'd like to encourage encourage everybody out there, if 6 Feet Under is your jam, to pre-order Torment, which is out February 24th on Metal Blade. Chris, is there anything else that you'd like to add before we go?
You know, you guys, great interview. Thank you very much for the questions. I appreciate it, man. It was a nice talk, for sure.
Yeah, thanks so much. Thanks so much for coming on today.
Thanks to Chris Barnes for doing that wonderful interview with us. 6 Feet Under's new album, Torment, is out February 24th on Metal Blade Records. You can follow us on Twitter at Toilet of Hell. You can follow me at 365 Days of Horror. You can follow Joe at Joe Thrashing Kale. And you can follow Brenicide at That's Not Metal. Be sure to like us on Facebook, join the Facebook group. And we also have a new email address for the podcast itself. So if you're in a band and you want to send us your music, or if you just want to send us hate mail, you can do that too. It's toiletofhellradio@gmail.com. We'll catch you next week.
Thanks, everybody.
Listening to 66.6 FM, Radio TOVH, The Flush.